The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, I am back. Sorry about yesterday. I was slightly under the weather, so I actually took a sick day. Don't do that very often, but it was necessary. So I'm back today, such with a voice such as it is. Excuse the the frog in there. And this morning, the news was kind of confusing. So what I want to do is start the show off today with someone who can explain what the president had such a hard time with, and that is the FISA vote that went on this morning in the House. Actually, before the vote, Donald Trump took to the Twitters, as he is wont to do in the morning during his executive time, you know. And so he tweeted something. He said, House votes on controversial FISA Act today. This is the act that may have been used with the help of the discredited and phony dossier to so badly surveil and abuse the Trump campaign by the previous administration and others, question mark. Now, I had no idea what he was talking about. And obviously, he didn't either, because about 90 minutes later, he continued. He said, with that being said, I have personally directed the fix to the unmasking process since taking office, and today's vote is about foreign surveillance of foreign bad guys on foreign land. We need it. Get smart. Now, if you thought the second tweet contradicted the first tweet, I think you'd be correct. As I said, my mind is already a bit foggy from this cold that I have, but I'm even foggier. So I thought we'd call on Marcy Wheeler. She writes at emptywheel.net. You see her everywhere. She's the best person I know on national security and civil liberties. And I thought if anyone could explain what the hell went on today, it would be Marcy Wheeler. And thankfully, she agreed to join us. So, Marcy, are you there?
I am. Sorry to hear you're not feeling well.
Oh, you know, look, I feel guilty. I live in Florida where it's warmer than the rest of the country. But I think with the temperature, you know, it got really cold last week. For us, really cold is, you know, down in the 40s. And then it goes back up to 80 degrees. And I think that's what got me this time. But I know you're in Michigan where it gets really cold. So, you know, I can't complain.
Well, it's like 50 here today. So
oh, wow.
Actually, quite balmy for us.
I bet. Well, you know, not like there's any climate change going on or anything.
Right, exactly.
Right. So the House today voted on this FISA provision. It's Section 702. Now, from his first tweet this morning, it was obvious that Donald Trump had no idea what he was talking about, isn't it?
Well, he had been watching Judge Napolitano on Fox. Almost all of his tweets are responses to Fox. So Judge Napolitano, who's on Fox, is actually pretty libertarian. And so he was complaining about the bill this morning, and Trump, in response, tweeted what he tweeted this morning. And the reference he's trying to make, and Trump is as confused on this as every Republican all year long has been. He was talking about when Mike Flynn got picked up on a traditional FISA warrant in December of 2016. But that's a traditional FISA warrant. That's not 702. I suspect that 702 has been used in the Mueller investigation, but we'll never learn how because they never tell us those things.
Uh-huh. So what was voted on today was not the type of FISA warrant that Flynn was picked up in. This has to do with, as he corrected himself in the second tweet, foreign surveillance in foreign lands, right? Section 702. Can you explain what 702 is?
Well, it's actually not just foreign surveillance. So don't believe your members of Congress say that.
Okay.
702 is what the government uses to force domestic providers, primarily things like Google, Yahoo, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, but also to a lesser extent, telecoms, the backbone provider. So you know, the large data movers in this country. It's what they use to force domestic providers to target people overseas. Mm-hmm. But to collect everything that they're doing. So for the examples they like to talk about are when a terrorist recruiter uses Facebook, they can just go to, you know, say, hi, Facebook, can we have everything that Facebook owns from that terrorist, including all of the Facebook messages that he is talking to Americans through? And you know, that like I said, the government likes to pretend this is just about terrorism, but it's not. It's also, there are three known certificates. One is terrorism, which is a kind of a no-brainer, but even there, it's not clear how they define all of their terrorist organizations. Mm-hmm. The second one is called counterproliferation. And so that's like spying on Iran to make sure that they don't get the bomb. That's actually going to spy on a lot of businesses, because they're going to spy on businesses that sell dual-use things to Iran. Right. As well as, you know, arms dealers and stuff like that. The third one is and the definition of proliferation is actually really broadly defined. The third one, which is the real problematic, it's called the foreign government certificate. And it's meant to be used for spying on, say, Russian spies, which is why I think 702 probably has been used in the Mueller investigation. But it also targets things like Chinese scientists whom the government suspects of trying to steal intellectual property from the United States. So there have been a number of cases where Chinese Americans or their spouses or what have you get sucked up this way, because the government identifies these interesting Chinese targets and they talk all the time with their Chinese American relatives, and that's the kind of thing that is where the impact becomes really problematic, because especially foreign government certificate, it's not tied to any bad stuff. Like it is designed to allow the government to spy on foreign governments and whatever those foreign governments are doing of interest. And so, you know, you might have a journalist who is close to, say, Macron in France, the president of France, and that journalist may be talking to people here in the United States about a story. Well, then that journalist's story is going to get caught, you know, is going to get spied on, stuff like that.
Okay, so now you said you tweeted out earlier today that the 702 bill the House just passed codifies the government's ability to use 702 to collect domestic communications from Tor and VPNs and use them for 8 enumerated crimes. Now, the VPNs, that's something that somebody, and I'm so ignorant on this stuff, so please bear with me, and I apologize for sounding stupid. People put that on their computer to keep from being hacked, to keep from being spied on, right? So this allows the government to go into these computers that have protection set up?
Yeah, I'm the only one who's written on this, and I really need some other journalists to replicate my work and to explain the technology behind it, because I'm not sure I understand the technology. With VPNs, it's going to work just like Google, I think. So the government will call up Viper VPN and say, actually, they won't call them because they're not located in the United States. They'll call a private internet access, which is located in the United States, and say, this person at this IP address, we think is a Russian spy. Can you track all of their traffic and tell us what they're doing while they're using the VPN? And it'll work just like Google. In fact, it works just like Google's, because Google will turn over searches in the name of 702 as well, and will turn over cookie-based information. So that's what they would do with a VPN. I think with Tor, which is another location the way which the government gets to do this is because it's these obscure your location. So it is like when the government released their report on their first technical report on Russian spying a year ago, they named 300 Tor exit nodes as Russian indicators of compromise, basically saying Russians are using Tor to come into the United States and do their hacking. And because of that, 300 of these exit nodes that are also used by me and anybody else who uses Tor got treated as Russian spy facilities. And the only time the government can use 702 for cybersecurity is when they're targeting state hackers, like Russian hackers.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, these Tor exit nodes became, as far as I understand it, my guess is what they're doing is they're collecting entrance and exit nodes at Tor to be able to track who's coming in and who's going out. But like I said, I don't understand the technology of it.
This is something that the vote was not just along party lines. I had the numbers here in front of me a moment ago. It passed 256 to 164, meaning quite a few Democrats voted with the Republicans for this. Is this a party line thing, or is there more nuance to it?
No, and it never has been, actually. I mean, I've been working on this issue since 2007, and that entire time has been a bipartisan effort. Both those privacy advocates who oppose this expanding surveillance and those who support it, bipartisan on both sides. My congressman is Justin. Anything having to do with money is horrible, or healthcare is horrible, but on surveillance is one of the key leaders in the House, and he and I get along great because see eye to eye on this.
Justin Amash, sorry, you got some of that electronic Skype-y stuff. So it was the more libertarian, apparently, and now it's got to go to the Senate, and Rand Paul is making some filibustering noises. Do you have any doubt that it'll pass in the Senate?
No, once it gets beyond the filibuster, both Paul and Wyden have said that they'll filibuster it, but it's scheduled for the cloture vote is scheduled for 5:30 on Tuesday, which is, they've got a long weekend. Mm-hmm. And then how long can Paul and Wyden filibuster? The bill is the law got extended along with the continuing resolution last year. So technically the law expires 18th. Although, in fact, the spying certificates are already signed through April 26. So they actually have a little more time than that to fix it. But, we'll be hearing panic noises next week about how they have to sign this right away.
I hear you. And then it basically goes on as it has for the last this authorizes this FISA Section 702 for the next 6 years.
Yeah. And here's one of the stupid things. This is one of the things that aggravates me the most about this. In the bill that just passed the House today, there are two things where the House is asking for information that they should have known 10 years ago. One of those is they're asking for when a defendant gets notice of being affected by FISA. So, for example, these Chinese Americans who have been targeted under this. No target of Chinese spying has ever gotten FISA, has ever gotten 702 notice. There are a number of cases where they've gotten traditional FISA notice, but they've never gotten 702 notice, which means there are all these cases in which 702 was clearly used, and none of these people have gotten the notice that by law they are permitted to get. Something 8 and 10 terrorist defendants have gotten notice, but they're the only ones, and we know that it's been used far more broadly than that. So they're breaking the law. This bill finally requires DOJ to explain to Congress how they do notice, but why didn't they ask that before they passed a 6-year extension, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one example. Another example is there are these backdoor searches at FBI. So FBI, all of the agencies who touch this data get this data in raw form, some of this data in raw form, And then they can access it in their own databases. And FBI gets something like 500 targets worth of information tied to existing existing investigations. So, for example, the Mueller investigation purely is on Russian targets that are of interest to them in the Russian investigation, people like Oleg Deripaska, for example. One of Manafort's key interlocutors he uses Gmail with. So clearly they're going to be collecting that guy's Gmail. And that'll go straight to FBI. And anything that's in that Gmail, when FBI does a search on somebody like Paul Manafort, and they, you know, if they, before Manafort was being investigated himself, they would search Paul Manafort in a database, and this guy's Gmail communications with him would come up. And the point is, you know, not that we don't want Robert Mueller to have access to this in his investigation of Paul Manafort, but we do, you know, they use it at a very low level, and they use it for purposes that are not law prosecution. So, for example, they also use it to find informants. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they may say, here's somebody in a mosque that we suspect is an extremist mosque. Let's look in our database and see if they show up in our database. And they may find something that has nothing to do with Islamic extremism, may have something to do with like tax fraud or something. And then they'll use that tax fraud to convince the person to spy on his imam and the rest of his mosque. And that's the kind of use that very few people in Congress even understand, much less talk about openly. And that's the kind of use that is really toxic and I think dangerous.
And that's why there are objections to this sort of unfettered spying on American citizens that this part of the FISA law authorizes.
Right, because the thing is, FBI is doing it at such a, I mean, they call it their Google.
Wow.
So they're referring to content that was acquired without a warrant, that is unminimized, as their Google, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And that to me is should be revealing, because these are not even open investigations. They're just sort of like, you know, if I said awful things about the Muslim kid who lives down the street, then FBI might do a search on him. And again, it might be that he calls home to Somalia or something and speaks to somebody completely innocently, but speaks to somebody that's been collected in Somalia, then all of a sudden he's going to get an FBI investigation that maybe he didn't really deserve.
Wow. And so Congress and a number of 55 or 65 Democrats went along with this and authorized Jeff Sessions to have unfettered looks into what we're doing online.
Right. And that with the Tor exception, which is where Jeff Sessions gets a viewable decision, he can determine that that this information can be used in anything having to do with national security. That language is there partly for finding informants thing that I just described.
Mm-hmm.
But what's to stop Jeff Sessions from saying that Black Lives Matter is a threat to national security, and saying that any Black Lives Matter activists who use either VPNs or Tor should have, I mean, basically what happens, Nicole, is they collect all of this data and they're supposed to get rid of the American stuff. But if they find in the process of getting rid of the American stuff that they're associated with these eight crimes or something that Jeff Sessions finds to be a threat to national security, then they get to keep it.
Wow. It's complicated stuff. And like I said, Marcy Wheeler, I always turn to you because you get it and you're able to explain it in a way that gets through my thick head. Some of the stuff is just, it's inconceivable. And yet here we are in the United States of America in 2018, and this is still going on. And it seems like it's just going to keep getting worse.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Marcy Wheeler. Emptywheel.net is where you find her on Twitter at emptywheel. I so appreciate your time and your expertise. Thank you again.
Hope you feel better, Nicole.
Thanks so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Marcy Wheeler. All right. Now, since I blew through what's news, we'll get that at the end of the show. I think we have Doug Christian on the line from the Talk Media News Service at talkmedianews.com to find out what else is going on in the news. Hey, Doug.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I was out sick yesterday. That's what that was about. Hanging in there, it's that time of year, you know, and I'm looking in the chat room. I was talking about how the weather has been fluctuating, you know, the temperatures. It goes from, you know, hot to cold and then hot again, and some in South Florida. And that's what gets you sick down here. I was talking with Marcy Wheeler, who's in Michigan. She said, oh, it's like 45, 50 degrees today. So, yeah, it's strange times out there.
It's global weirdness. I mean, that's what global warming is.
Yes, it is.
You got these high energy weather patterns that do all sorts of strange things. That was a great interview with Marcy Wheeler. That was really, really interesting.
She's really smart when it comes to this stuff. And, you know, I was a little, again, my mind is a bit foggy from not feeling well anyway. And then I get these, you know, read these contradictory tweets from the president, and it's having to do with FISA, which sort of makes my eyes roll back in my head anyway. So I thought, you know what, let me talk to Marcy, because she can usually explain it really well. And she did.
Well, she did. She did a great job. And everything seems to be pointing toward the finances on this. I mean, this is Trump says there's no collusion. You know what? Fine. There may not be. Actually, this whole thing is now turning into a financial investigation.
And obstruction. You know what? He keeps saying there's no collusion. There is obstruction, and I haven't heard him say there's no obstruction.
Exactly. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And just firing of Comey itself.
Yeah, it's obstruction. And that's why every time I hear him go on and on about how there's no collusion, I think about how his people have even said, well, you know, they backtracked on it and said, well, collusion's not necessarily a crime. OK, fine. Put that aside. What about obstruction? And they never talk about that. And that's what, to my mind, he's guilty of.
Yes. And also this whole thing, I mean, it gets back to I always thought very early on that the financial aspect of this was going to play a key role. Mm-hmm. I never understood how a casino could not make money. And a friend of mine said to me, look, casinos, like real estate properties, are prime hotbeds for money laundering. That's what they do if they're corrupt. And he said, there's no way that he lost money unless there was something else happening.
Right.
There's no way. Casinos don't lose money. And so it gets back to perhaps why Preet Bharara was fired.
Of course.
Because from what I understand, he had been he was looking into that. And now there has been more talk. They're looking into the Alpha Bank server pinging the Trump Tower servers very frequently. What's that about? Why are they doing this? What about the Strait deal where Trump bought a property for $60 million? Some Russian oligarch bought it for $100 million
right.
And then tore the property down? I mean, there's something happening.
There is something happening. And there's something and it's with Deutsche Bank, who Trump just wiped out a fine against. If I recall, I read something about it yesterday and I can't trust anything I read yesterday. But Deutsche Bank was in the news, and Trump giving them a huge pass on some big fine, I believe. So there's stuff going on there.
Yeah, Deutsche Bank have been the enablers. They're the ones who are helping to put these two parties together. And that's their business model, too. Just as Trump is ostensibly real estate but really money laundering, Deutsche Bank is ostensibly banking but really money laundering. That's what they're about.
Right, and they're the only ones who've been loaning Trump money. They're the ones who've been financing him for the last few years, so there's something
exactly.
There.
Exactly.
There's something there.
One of the things that's interesting, and have you read any of the testimony? I mean, it's so long, the testimony from Simpson, Glenn Simpson.
I did not read it. I spent most of yesterday in bed, so I honestly have not
read
it.
Well, it's the reading list these days is so packed. I mean, I'm trying to get through Fire and Fury.
Yeah, me too.
By the way, a very good read.
I'm about a third of the way through it, but I kept hearing it's funny and, you know, a lot of the stuff we'd already heard for sure. And,
exactly.
And it still makes me kind of nauseous. So, like I said, I'm about a third of the way through it. I don't know if I'm going to read it. I just read a tweet from Matt Taibbi who says he's on his second run through it and he can't figure out if it's, you know, like great journalism or what. But there's a lot in there that you just can't believe they're talking about the president of the United States.
Right. Well, I mean, and by the way, I mean, yes, it's not footnoted extensively, like even like a David Foster Wallace novel would be. But at the same time, neither was Bob Woodward's books. All the President's Men extensively footnoted either. I mean, it was a tale.
Uh-huh.
And it's well told. I mean, and it's insightful, no less. So I'm only a 50% way through it myself, but I've got a half to go on it.
Right.
But I'd say this on the testimony. One of the things that was really interesting was the methodology that Fusion GPS and Orbis used, as many people call it, the Orbis dossier, not the Trump dossier, because mm-hmm. it was Orbis that put the dossier together. And with the way they did this, and what they did was they actually went through the lawsuits against Trump and also the multitude of books written about him, so that they would actually they wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel. Now, find out what other people were already finding out about him before they started digging, which is a very interesting methodology, I thought.
Right. Yes, it is. Hey, Doug, before I have to let you go, do you know what the latest is on the immigration deal? Jeff Flake had tweeted out something that there's a deal. Others have said there's no deal. It's like it sounds like a TV show, a game show, deal or no deal. Do you know where they are on this?
I do not. I had not heard anything about that. I mean, I've heard the same thing that you did, that Flake said there was a deal, and then the Democrats say there is no deal. I have not heard. The weird thing let's put it this way. If the Republicans don't allow some sort of deal, they're going to be slaughtered in the next election by an increasingly Hispanic populace.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel that they are feeling that they're feeling the pressure on this, too. And by the way, before I go, there's one other thing I want to mention because have you seen the new report that's come out called Hope from the Heartland and how Democrats could better serve the Midwest by bringing rural working class wisdom to Washington?
No, I haven't seen this.
Yeah, Sherry Bustos. And it's very interesting. It's really reading. It's something that I think that all progressives should really look at very, very strongly is how were Democrats speaking directly to the voters in the Midwest, in the flyover states, and how are we ignoring them? And it goes in about one of the things I think one of the great lessons from this report was. Many people said, look, I'm a Democrat, I've been a Democrat all my life, but I like to shoot guns. Why are you saying that I'm no good? If you know, we need to be not quite as dogmatic in what the definition is in order to embrace the whole variety of people throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the lesson of the report. And also that the report should really focus on jobs, kind of back to what Clinton used to say, job, it's the economy, stupid.
Well, that was the criticism of the Democrats of Hillary. One of the criticisms of Hillary Clinton's campaign was that it was not enough about that as much as it was about, Trump is bad. Where Trump was talking about the economy. Trump was talking about the things, even though he was lying about everything. Jimmy Kimmel noted last night that yesterday marked, according to the Washington Post, Trump's 2000th lie since he took office. I expected it was much more than that, but he's averaging a 5 point some odd number of lies per day. Again, it seems higher than that to me. But anyway, there you have it.
Well, and also, I mean, politicians who've been around for a while, they, you never win a successful campaign running against an opponent, but you run for on positive ideas. What are you for?
Right, exactly.
And so, yeah. And so while Trump was a was no doubt a viable target, that's still not the reason to run. You run because you want to do something there.
Right. And you, you need the message. And that's still the criticism of the Democrats is what are they, what is their message? What are they running on rather than what are they running against? What, tell us again the name of this report.
Oh, yes. This is, I'll read this to you again. This is the, I'm getting the name here. Oops, let me get it. It's called Hope from the Heartland. Here, it's called Hope from the Heartland. Hold on.
Yes.
Ah.
Okay.
Hope. Just, yeah, give it to
Hope
me.
From the Heartland.
Yeah, it is called Hope from the Heartland, How Democrats Can Better Serve the Midwest by Bringing Rural Working-Class Wisdom to Washington. And it was put out by the leadership pack of Sherry Bustos.
Oh, okay. A congresswoman. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All
yeah,
right.
Third term.
All right. Doug Christian from the Talk Media News Service. They're at talkmedianews.com. Always a pleasure, Doug. Thank you so much.
Same here, Nicole. It was a pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. It is Thursday. That means Howie Klein will be along in just a moment. He's back from vacation. We'll get into some stuff. But I always, Howie Klein is the most traveled person I know. So we'll find out where he was this time and find out a bit more about, you know, where in the world was Howie Klein? That's next. Don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
These are the sounds of crushed souls, the sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio, and you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary
sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, yes. Every Thursday we get together with Howie Klein of Down With Tyranny and the Blue America Pack, and we talk politics and all that. This is our first get-together of the new year, so Happy New Year, Howie.
Happy New Year to you too, Nicole, and everybody else.
And welcome back. I know you were on vacation. Where in the world did you go this time?
Thailand. I was in Thailand. It was really wonderful. I've been there so many times, it feels like going home.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I think it was like my 20s. I don't know. I stopped counting after 20, but my 20-something.
You know, I tell people all the time, you are the most traveled person I know. You've traveled the world over. And in fact, you know, we always talk about your Down With Tyranny blog, but you have another blog. Your travel blog is the Around the World blog?
Yes, which I have been very lax about doing it.
Was anything different in Thailand this time around? I always wonder how the rest of the world reacts to the idiocy that is Donald Trump.
Yeah, well, whenever we ran into Westerners, Thais are very, very polite, and I don't think talking about Trump would be considered, they don't think it would be being polite, so people didn't really bring it up. Even people who I sort of know don't bring it up because it's an embarrassment. But we ran into lots of people from other countries, and they immediately brought it up. And, basically, it's what you would expect. We wind up taking a lot of boats rather than buses. So you can travel around Bangkok on boats a lot. And so you sort of on this crowded boat with people, like it's like a bus, but it lends itself to talking with people. And like the other day, we met a woman from Denmark, and as soon as she heard our accents, immediately she started asking, how could we possibly elect that moron to be president? Uh-huh. And I'm trying to explain to her that, hey, I live in California. He lost by 3 million votes here. But she was very sophisticated, and she didn't take that. But basically, he's a joke everywhere in the world, except for people who think he's scary.
Yes.
So people see him as either scary or a joke.
Well, and it's possible to be both, because he's a bad, scary joke. I just a few minutes ago, I don't know if you know Marcy Wheeler well or not, but I had her on talking about the whole FISA thing today. And, the fact that he'll tweet something out showing that he has no understanding of something that's so important, and then tweet it out because he saw something on Fox and Friends in the morning. And it even got Nancy Pelosi to ask Paul Ryan to pull this bill today because it was obvious that Trump was against it from what he tweeted. And then they had to go into, recovery mode and fix it. And he had to come back with another tweet to correct what his first tweet said. These are matters of life and death. It is frightening. I can imagine being a world citizen. I'm a U.S. citizen, and he scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, it's better not to have to defend him or the country or anything. I mean, it's just kind of embarrassing, is what it is.
Yes, it is. Oh. So while you were gone, something else that I think is embarrassing happened. So the Golden Globe Awards were Sunday night, and Oprah Winfrey was given the Cecil B. DeMille Lifetime Achievement Award, and she gave a great speech. That's what Oprah Winfrey does. She talks for a living. She's a great speaker. I think she's a smart woman.
Great speaker. Okay.
Yes.
But what? And maybe she's a smart woman. Right. I don't know. Who wrote the speech?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
No, I don't either. That's why I asked. In other words, I understand it was a great speech. I didn't watch it, but I understand it was a great speech.
Right.
But is she just reading it off a teleprompter, a speech that some smart person wrote for her, or did she write the speech? I mean, who knows?
I don't know.
And it makes a difference, because I'm sure I know where you're going with this, which is, our next president.
No!
a clown. Do we have a clown already in Trump? And we need another celebrity or another business person, another CEO as president? Didn't we learn a lesson yet?
That's what I'm saying. I've been horrified by the call. So seriously, she delivers a nice speech that lasted, 6 or 8 minutes. And all of a sudden, the crowds are screaming, Oprah for president. No. Have we learned nothing? I mean, nothing. She's a celebrity. She's a billionaire. Everything I know about, I've never met her, never spoken with her. She seems like a smart woman, a good business person, a celebrity. That does not make her presidential material. Haven't we learned that lesson yet?
I agree. I mean, maybe she could run for city council first.
That would be smart.
Yeah.
So...
I feel very much about the same way. I have a story coming out, I think, I don't know, either tonight or tomorrow, about the whole idea of electing
CEOs who are not usually a good idea. She's not the only one who's being considered. I mean, you know, there are about 10 of them that keep getting mentioned over and over again, and none of them are, as far as I can tell, are suitable. I mean, having been a CEO, I know it's not the same thing as being a political leader. There are differences, and when you're the CEO, you don't have to take into consideration the same things because the buck stops with you and you're the boss. And with the president, it's not exactly the same thing, although Trump doesn't understand why it's not the same thing, and he'd like it to be the same thing, and that's what being an authoritarian is.
Yes.
And I think we're better off with someone who's come up working inside of politics, where the idea of working together with people, getting, you know, whenever you see these Trump polls, one of the questions is, do you think he's a good leader? And he always does very, very badly on that. And I don't know if people realize or just intuit that the reason for that is because he's not a good leader. He's a boss, which is very different from being a good political leader. He doesn't have any of the traits of being a good political leader. And the I don't know, 30% or 35% of people who think he's a good leader are just the kind of people who want an authoritarian figure at the head of things, who can just call the shots the way he wants, the way Trump wants. Mm-hmm. And that is not what the American system is based on. But that's what usually what a CEO is.
Right.
But, you know, I don't want Mark Cuban or Zuckerberg or Oprah or Carly Fiorina, God forbid, or any of those people. I don't see them as being good political candidates, let alone leaders. You know, that's one thing about Romney. At least he didn't go from being a corporate leader to being immediately a presidential candidate. Mm-hmm. He worked it out by being the governor of a state, and I think that's a good idea, and I think it worked for him.
Right. Schwarzenegger, too. He can't be president because he was not born here. But, you know, he was a governor of California. I still don't see that being a business person or a celebrity, though, makes you the right person to step into government and be a governmental leader. Now, I wasn't living in California when Schwarzenegger was governor, but I'm just reading now about how, you know, Jerry Brown's legacy, and California again now has a surplus. It seems to me that Jerry Brown, the career politician, is doing a much better job at governing the state of California than the actor did.
Yeah, well, I mean, although he was, to be fair, he wasn't really terrible. He's not like Trump. And he realized right away that he'd have to work with the Democrats and work with other politicians, and he couldn't rule the way, you know, you're not a king when you're the governor, you're not a king when you're the president. And I think a lot of business people don't understand that. You rise to the top in a business, and when, you know, especially in a business like Trump's, where you are the business. I mean, I mean, I said I was a CEO, but that doesn't mean I didn't have people I reported to. I certainly did. I mean, I was the president of a company, so I had a chairman to report to. I had a board of directors to report to. I had people over me in the corporate hierarchy that weren't part of our company, but that were part of the entity that owned our company. But nevertheless, with the people who I dealt with, I mean, it was in some way discomforting. In fact, you know, on the plane back from Thailand the other day, I read Fire and Fury.
Okay.
And Trump demands sycophants around him. That's mm-hmm. what he wants. He really demands ass kissers. That's it.
Right.
But then he recognizes that they're ass kissers, and then he sort of turns on them or looks down on them. So on the one hand, he doesn't want people around him who aren't ass kissers, but then he gets unhappy that he's got nothing but ass kisses around him, which is weird.
Well, everything about him is weird.
You notice?
I have. I'm, you know, I've started reading Fire and Fury as well. I'm about a third of the way through it, and it's frustrating.
How long
as hell.
Is it, by the way? I'm not quite done, but I'm reading it on online, so I don't know exactly how long it goes. I'm on about page 230 or something like that.
You know, I don't know because I'm reading the Kindle version, and it's not telling me the page numbers. It's just telling me that I'm 33% of the way through. So that's how I know I'm about a third of the way through it. And I honestly don't know if I'm going to finish it or not because it really turns my stomach. It sickens me. Much like, you know, following the news each day does. It makes it really hard to do this job because the subject matter is so disturbing.
Sure. I was lucky while I was away. I didn't turn on the TV once.
Wow.
There was, you know, in the place where I ate breakfast, there was a CNN thing on without the sound. So I would see the headlines. But other than that, you know, I read the headlines on on my laptop. But I know, you know, none of the regular places that I get my news from on TV or commentary on news. So no Rachel Maddow, no Chris Hayes, no Lawrence. It was kind of refreshing to sort of step away from that.
It was pretty quiet over the holidays. It was nice. I took a week off and just unplugged from it as well. But on the times that I did turn on the TV, it was a lot of here's what happened this year. And it was a rehash of what we have just gone through for the last 11 months.
Oh, God.
And, yeah,
who needed that?
Exactly. So, you know, it was, I think we all took a little bit of a much needed break from it. And here we are back at it. So, but there is news. The story that seems to be hitting each day with just different names are the various Republicans who are deciding, congressmen, that they're not running again. Like this morning, or was it yesterday, we heard that Daryl Issa said he won't seek re-election. Well, today he's talking.
Actually, he won't seek re-election
in
his
district. Right. Yeah. So now he's talking about running in Duncan Hunter's district. If he
right. Well, it's very. I mean, I was writing about that a few months ago. That it was very likely that Duncan Hunter, and I wasn't the only one. It wasn't like I had some insight that other people didn't have. In fact, I had discussed it with a couple of friends of mine at the DCCC about 3 months ago, so they were aware that this was likely to happen. It's Duncan Hunter Jr., but like Duncan Hunter Sr., he's a crook, and he got caught, and now he's under very serious investigation. So there was always a lot of talk about him being indicted before the election, and it's a very, very, very red district, whereas Issa's district is, you know, is a purple district, and I'm sure he's looking at the same polling that I'm looking at, and there's no chance he can be elected in the 49th, but in the 50th, if Duncan Hunter steps away, then Issa would likely win that seat. So there's been talk for several months about, you know, how is that going to happen? So the polite way of telling that story would be that Duncan Hunter has to prepare for his trial. So if he's indicted, he can't run, that kind of thing. But there's another way to look at it. Remember, Issa, who's a criminal himself, a career criminal, is also the richest member of Congress. And Duncan Hunter isn't. Duncan Hunter is of modest means. And Issa could bribe him easily, I'll pay for your defense.
Wow.
Here's a check for $1 million.
Oh,
go
my
away.
Goodness. Yeah. Well, and that's, I could see that happening.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is that there, you know, it's the California system now. So it's all about the primary. So there was some fear that the Republicans would just put in two strong candidates, and they would wind up as the two who came out of this thing, and it would wind up being a Republican versus Republican general election. So that's happened before, but because there are so many Democrats running, so that's a little bit of a little problematic. But already there looks like there are already three Republicans who have jumped in, and it also looks like the Democrat who's favored, Doug Applegate, is very, very, very strong. The newest polling shows him just kicking ass. But, you know, there were a bunch of wealthy, opportunistic-type Democrats who thought to themselves, well, look, there's nobody, some guy from the Marines, look at him, he almost beat Daryl Issa, I could certainly do that. So all these, you know, worthless multimillionaires jumped in. You know, this one who got convinced by a new Dem to run, you know, some multimillionaire got convinced by a new Dem friend of his who said, hey, you know, you spend a little money, you'll win. And then another one, you know, same story with another one. And then some heiress just jumped into the race. She parachuted in from Brooklyn, the Qualcomm heiress. And she has unlimited money. She's, again, you know, absolutely worthless people. None of them have any political experience. They're just wealthy and think that, you know, the world owes them a congressional seat. And they're just, you know, just absolute garbage candidates.
This goes back to the Oprah question. Why does somebody who has that much money, and I probably know the answer, but I'll ask you anyway, Howie Klein, why does somebody with that much money who doesn't need to work, why do they want this job? Why do they want to be in Congress? Why do they want to be president?
I don't think they see it as a job. I mean, certainly Trump doesn't.
No.
It's just you know, to be in Congress, you have that, you, even if you're only in one term, people call you Congress person for the rest of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be president, I mean, that's a big honor. I think Trump is rethinking that a little bit, but not totally yet. But it's, you know, these are not serious people. I mean, Obama was a very, very serious guy. He was a political guy, and he took the job extremely seriously. I mean, no one thinks Trump is taking this seriously. It's a big game for him. And, you know, people like that should not be running for office. You know, it's funny, a lot of people who voted for Trump voted for him because he was a political outsider and because mm-hmm. they said, well, look what a successful businessman he is. And they didn't really look to see what kind of a businessman he was. I mean, people in New York massively voted against Trump because he's been in the newspapers for decades. And everyone knew that he wasn't a successful businessman. Everyone knew that he was a failure who was bailed out of bankruptcy with taxpayer money over and over and over
That's
again.
Right.
And he was a failure, and his businesses were, you know, mostly failed. And, you know, so people who knew who Trump was would never say, well, you know, he's a successful businessman. Trump was always saying that about himself and saying, I'll put my magic to work for you. And people who knew him, we were shuddering. I mean, the things that Mike Bloomfeld, who's a real billionaire, the things that he was, or Bloomberg, I should say, sorry, was saying about him were you know, very telling. You know, he said that every businessman who ever did business with Trump wouldn't vote for him because
right.
they knew he was a crook and they knew he was out for himself and that he had no morals, no business morals. And no one thought he should be president. But, you know, to someone who doesn't know that stuff and someone, you know, could get attracted by the way he was selling himself, and they thought, yeah, this guy's made $10 billion. He started from scratch, even though he didn't start from scratch.
Right.
And he'll do that for me, and I'll have $10 billion too.
And now, you know, they just put a new the new Trump policy is to allow states to require people on Medicaid have a job in order to take advantage of the Medicaid benefits. They're talking about a lot of veterans, people who, you know, have traumatic injuries or who can't find a job for whatever reason. You know, and a lot of these people are Trump voters, and they're learning the really hard way that they were scammed.
Yeah, unfortunately, there are plenty of people who aren't Trump voters who are going to learn this too. So, in other words, it's easy for us to say, well, these Trump voters deserve whatever they get. The unfortunate thing about this is that they're not the only ones who get it. I mean, I wouldn't be happy. There's nothing that would make me happier to see every Trump voter, you know, get everything they deserve for saddling the country with him. The horror of that is that everyone who's not a Trump voter gets the same thing.
Right. Howie Klein, there's a new Quinnipiac poll out, and the numbers are looking good for, you know, not good for Trump, for sure. But they asked one question. If the election were held today, would you want to see the Republican Party or the Democratic Party win control of the House of Representatives? 35% said Republicans, 52% said Democrats. That's a 17-point advantage. So are the Democrats being overly confident right now?
No, I don't know about that. I don't think that. No, they're pretty paranoid. But, you know, their whole everything about the Democrats is basically based on a reality, which is, hey, you know, we suck, but we're less horrible than the Republicans. We're the lesser of two evils. And that's what they are as a party. I mean, they just endorsed a whole bunch of, I think, seven new red to blue candidates. And they're all terrible. Every one of them is terrible. You know, and in some cases, there are really good candidates running against them. I mean, the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, like to say, well, we don't interfere with primaries. Well, they do. You know, just as an example, in Nebraska's second district, which is in Omaha, Nebraska, Bernie won that district. And he won by a lot. He beat Hillary. So that tells you that the people there don't want status quo. They don't want more of the same. They want something different to change. That's why they voted for Bernie. And he didn't win by a couple of points. He won very substantially. So what does the DCCC do? They endorse this dorky candidate named Brad Ashford, who was a Republican office holder. He was Republican most of his life, who then changed to be an independent and then a Democrat. And then he was in Congress. He was voting more with the Republicans than with the Democrats. When I say more, I don't mean 51-49. It was more like 70-30. He was basically a Republican. Except on some issues, he voted with the Democrats, but very few. And he was just terrible. He was a member of the Blue Dog Caucus. And the Democrats in Omaha hated him so much that the next time he was up for reelection, they just didn't go and vote for him. So he lost. So he's not. So then he got another job, and then he just got fired from the other job. And then he said, well, I guess I can run for Congress again. The DCCC will pay everything anyway. And meanwhile, there's a really wonderful, proven young woman named Kara Eastman who's running, and she really would make a great congresswoman. She would be fantastic. But the DCCC doesn't want – they won't even be neutral. Kara versus Ashford, you'd think, well, you know, they should jump at the chance of getting Kara in there, but no. And they refuse to be neutral, and they're just supporting him. And all their excuses are lies. So they say, well, you know, is she really a serious candidate? Well, she's raised almost the exact same amount that he's raised.
Wow.
They're both in the low six figures. And there's no reason to treat her like that and to treat other candidates like that. And that's what they do. That's the DCCC. I mean, they you know, anyone who's listening to your show probably already knows that if the DCCC is behind somebody, the chances that that person are terrible are very great.
Right.
They don't find anybody good. They just get behind terrible candidates.
And a lot of times it's
conservative candidates.
The person that you were talking about before, who is the millionaire, the independently wealthy self-funder, because they figure they can spend enough money to get themselves into office, and then they get another D in the D column.
Right. And there's no reason to believe that she's got anything going for her, nor the other candidates. Do they have anything going for them? I don't see it, except that they're very, very, very rich. And the DCCC is very attracted to that. When they see somebody rich, they start to drool. They can't help themselves. You just see the spit coming down their chin, especially Nancy Pelosi, worse than anybody.
That's really sad. Howie Klein, I so appreciate you coming down. I know you're still a bit jet-lagged from the trip.
Can you tell? I am so jet-lagged. You can't imagine. I mean, I was up this morning blogging at 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, my.
I want to take a nap.
Okay. Well, we're done. So you can go nap now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Howie Klein, I'll talk to you next week.
Yes, I promise I won't be jet-lagged next week.
No problem. All right. Thank you, Howie.
Bye-bye, Nicole.
Bye-bye. Howie Klein. I could tell he was tired. I know the feeling. I do. You can find Howie always at downwithtyranny.com. That's where you can find our pal Gaius Publius as well and a few other bloggers. But Howie's insight is always there. And, of course, the Blue America Pack that Howie runs, along with Digby and John Amato from Crooks and Liars, where they find the best progressive candidates. And look, it is 2018. We are now officially in primary season. Primaries are so important. That's when you got to make sure you're registered so you can vote in the primaries and we can get the best progressive candidates. I'll make sure I put a link to Blue America on the blog today along with the podcast at NicoleSandler.com. Tomorrow we'll finish off the week with Greg Palast. You know, we heard earlier this week that they had disbanded that Election Integrity Commission. We'll find out what that's all about because it's not as good as it sounds. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone.